Share today of biographies of great Rabbanim. We will start off in the 1500s, the sages of Sfas. Sfas or Sfad. We have in the early 1500s a concentration of great sages lived and learned there, and here are a few of the most famous. Rav Yitzchok Luria Ashkenazi, also known as the Rizal. Rav Yitzchok was born in Shalayim in the year 1534. His father died when Yitzchok was young, and his mother took him to live with his wealthy uncle in Cairo. Recognizing Yitzchok's outstanding abilities, his uncle provided for his livelihood so that he could devote himself to his studies. After marrying his first cousin, his uncle's daughter, Rav Yitzchok began an intensive program, spending the entire week in solitude, immersed in prayer and study, and returning home only on the Shabbos. He was among the Torah giants of his day, but he's best known for his mastery of the Kabbalah, the Torah's mystical teachings. At the age of 36, the Rizal moved to the city of Sfas, where he lived for only 18 months until his passing at the age of 38 in 1572. His most devoted pupil, Rav Chaim Vital, recorded his vast teachings, which became the basis for all future study by Mekubalim, scholars of Kabbalah. The shul in which the Rebbe prayed and studied, as well as the fresh spring water mikveh he used, still stand and are visited by thousands of people each year. The mikveh, it's brought down that this mikveh is very cold, by the way, and if anybody goes into it, it's brought down that you'll do tshuva before one dies, for sure, because the mikveh is unbelievable cold. Then we have Rav Moshe Alshich. Rav Moshe was one of the select few who received the smicha that had been revived in Sfas by Rav Yaakov Beirov. It was conferred upon him by Rav Yosef Karo, and he was appointed as dayan of the Beis Din Sfas. On the Shabbos, Rav Moshe would deliver lectures on the Torah, replete with brilliant insights and ethical teachings. These lectures evolved into the Sefer Torah's Moshe, or as it is most commonly known, the Alshich. Then we have Rav Shlomo Alkabetz. Late Friday afternoon, the Rizal and his disciples would dress in pure white Shabbos clothes. They would leave the shul and assemble outside to greet the Shabbos queen. They were led in song by Rav Shlomo Alkabetz, and together with him would sing the Lechot Dodi prayer he had composed. The Lechot Dodi was adopted by Ashkenazic Jews as the essential prayer in the service which ushers in the Shabbos. At the last stanza, the congregation turns around to the shul entrance to symbolically welcome the incoming Shabbos. Rabbi Alkabetz was a great Kabbalist and author. He wrote Menos HaLevi, a commentary on Megillas Esther, as a Purim gift for his future father-in-law. In the year 5325, or in the English year 1565, we find the Shulchan Aruch was written by Rabbi Yosef Karo in Sfas. Rabbi Yosef organized Jewish law by subject and broke it down into chapters and numbered paragraphs to make the study of Jewish law accessible to everyone. The name Shulchan Aruch means set table. Everything is ready for consumption. The influence of the Shulchan Aruch continues to be as strong today as it was when it was first published. Rabbi Yosef Karo was born in Spain and at age of 4 fled with his family to Constantinople, Turkey. By the way, Rabbi Yosef Karo, who wrote the Shulchan Aruch, was 4 years old when Columbus discovered America, which was in the year 1492. Over the centuries, the Sephardic Jewish community, which originated in Spain, and the Ashkenazic Jewish community, which originated in France and Germany, had developed differences in Jewish custom. One of the best known differences in custom is that Sephardic Jews eat rice and legumes on Pesach, while Ashkenazic Jews are prohibited by custom from doing so. Not long after the publication of the Shulchan Aruch, Rav Moshe Israelis of Poland, known as the Ramon, added to the Shulchan Aruch additional notes that are called the Mapa, the tablecloth. The Ramon was an Ashkenazi, and he added his comments to clarify those instances when the Shulchan Aruch differed from the Ashkenazic custom. The Shulchan Aruch and the Mapa printed together became, after the Torah and the Talmud, the book that has had the most powerful impact on the Jews throughout our long history. And the Shulchan Aruch is divided into 4 units. Orach Chaim contains laws of daily laws, the Shabbos and Yom Tovim. The Evan HaEzer deals with laws of marriage and divorce, etc. Choshen Mishpat deals with civil law. The Yoredeir deals with Jewish dietary laws, kashrus, the laws of family purity, interest, charity, Torah study, visiting the sick, deaf, and mourning, and other laws. All questions of modern living can be answered by studying and applying the appropriate passages in the Shulchan Aruch. The Halacha, as recorded in the Shulchan Aruch and its commentators, is the authoritative code of Jewish life, regulating all Jewish experience. Rabbinic ordination is conferred on students upon achieve mastery of major parts of the Shulchan Aruch and its commentaries. The life of Rabbi Yosef Caro. Rabbi Yosef Caro, as we mentioned before, was born in Spain in 1488, and he lived there until he was expelled with the entire Jewish community on the fateful 9th of 1492. First seeking refuge in Portugal, the family was soon forced to flee once again. Yosef spent his early childhood growing up as a refugee in Constantinople. Despite his difficult beginnings, Rav Yosef developed his abilities to the point where his writings had monumental impact on the Jewish people. He began writing the Beis Yosef, a comprehensive commentary on the Torah, at the age of 35, diligently working, perfecting it, and completing it after 32 years. At the age of 48, Rabbi Caro left Turkey to settle in Sfas. There he was granted the newly reinstated smicha ordination by his teacher mentor Rav Berov, a master scholar, halachic authority, and Kabbalist. Rav Yosef was chosen to succeed Berov in the prestigious position of Av Beis Din, chief judge of Sfas, after Rabbi Berov's passing. Rabbi Yosef Caro also wrote Kesef Mishnah, a commentary on the Rambam's Mishnah Torah, Magid Meishorim, and written responses to halachic inquiries. The Shulchan Aruch of Caro's most renowned work was published when he was 76 years old. He passed away in 1575 at the age of 87. We mentioned earlier about the Ramah, and we're going to spend a little time talking about it. The life of Rabbi Moshe Israelis. He was known as Ramah. For centuries after his death, he died in 1572, the Ramah's grave was a pilgrimage site for the Jews of Poland. On Lag BaOmer, his yard site, crowds would gather there, and his tombstone is inscribed the sentence, "From Moshe to Moshe, there was no one like Moshe," just like you have this by the Rambam's kever, it has it also on the Ramah's kever. He achieves worldwide recognition through his comments on Rabbi Yosef Caro's Shulchan Aruch, and they establish him as the accepted halachic authority for all of Ashkenazic Jewry. He also wrote other halachic and philosophical works, as well as responsive. As a young man, the Ramah's Torah genius was recognized, and he was appointed to the Krakow Rabbinical Court, a position usually reserved for much older men. He corresponded on halachic issues with the greatest sages of his age. In the Ramah's shul in Krakow, which was built in his lifetime, there was a Sefer Torah that was written in Ramah's own hand and read only on special occasions. Jewish tourists in Europe today make both the Ramah's shul and his tomb in Krakow important stops on their tours. Let's talk about the Maral. In 1609, or in the Hebrew year 5369, Rabbi Yehuda Lo ben Bezalel, known as Maral, an acronym of Moreinu Harav Lo, was born in 1526. He had been chief rabbi of Morovia and was installed as chief rabbi of Prague in 1598. His intelligence and knowledge earned him the friendship and admiration of Emperor Rudolf Number 2 of Austria. He authored dozens of works, including a super commentary on Rashi's Torah commentary, a treatment of the Haggadic portions of the Talmud, and many ethical and philosophical works. Using a blend of philosophy and Kabbalah, he explains many of the ethical teachings and stories found in the Talmud and expounds their deeper meanings. He is among the most influential thinkers in Jewish history and has impacted virtually every stream of Jewish thought. The Maral advocated a system of education where students would first master all of Torah, then all of Mishnah, and only then begin the study of Talmud. He also instituted the Chevre Mishnayos, groups of adults who studied the Mishnah. This idea, which originated in Prague, spread throughout Europe. By the way, since we are talking about the morale, if you are interested in learning the morale on Pirkei Avos, please visit us online at EnglishTorahTapes.com. Press Pirkei Avos and you'll be able to learn the morale on Pirkei Avos besides other commentaries on Pirkei Avos. One of the most fascinating stories in Jewish history concerns the morale in its creation, the Golem. According to this legend, the morale gathered a select few men under a star-studded sky. After much personal preparation, studying holy works, and repeatedly immersing in the mikveh, they were ready to harness powerful spiritual forces. The morale shaped earth into the form of a man, and using Kabbalistic secrets, transformed the mound of earth into a living being, a large, strong man, lacking the power of speech, a golem. The morale named the golem he created Yosef. The golem's mission was to protect the Jews from all attempts by anti-Semites to discredit or destroy them through secret plots, blood libels, or attacks. According to the legend, over the course of many years, the morale and the secret weapon, the golem, prevented many catastrophes from befalling Jewish communities. When the morale decided there was no further need for the golem, he ordered it to accompany him to the attic of the large Parag Shul, called the Antinah Shul, where he transformed it back into lifelessness. The morale descended from the attic, which was then sealed permanently. Now what's interesting to note is that one of the few large shuls not destroyed during the Holocaust was the morale's shul. The Nazis' repeated attempts to destroy it mysteriously failed. And also, at the entrance to Prague's city hall stands a monument erected to the morale. In other words, you see a monument that's specially dedicated for this as a statue of Yehuda Lo ben Bezalel, morale of Prague. Let's talk about the Shiloh, 1621, or the Hebrew year 5381. Despite his success, fame, and secure position, the 60-year-old Rabbi Yeshayahu Horowitz, chief rabbi of Prague, decided to undertake the dangerous and difficult journey to Eretz Yisrael. In the 17th century, when one left Europe to move to Eretz Yisrael, it meant that he would have almost no contact with the family left behind. To provide guidance for his sons and grandchildren who were remaining in Europe, Rabbi Horowitz wrote a sefer, book that eventually served as a guide not only for his children, but for the entire family of the Jewish people. Shnei Luchos HaBris. This work includes ethical teachings, many based on Kabbalah, halachic decisions, and guidelines for the observance of various customs. The author became known as the Shiloh, the acronym of his famous work. The Shiloh traveled to Israel by way of Italy. As he crossed the Mediterranean, his ship was nearly captured by pirates. He then traveled overland by caravan to the cities of Aleppo and Damascus. Finally, after a year of travel, he arrived in Yerushalayim, where he became the chief rabbi of the Ashkenazic community. Let's talk about some famous Talmud commentators from the years 1500 to the year 1600. Let's take the Marshal. Rabbi Shlomo Luria Marshal, a descendant of Rashi, founded and led the yeshiva in Lublin. His commentary on the Talmud, Chochma Shlomo, is printed at the back of standard editions of the Talmud, appearing beneath the commentary of the Marshal and alongside that of the Maram. Using manuscripts in early editions, the Marshal took great pains to accurately establish the text of the Talmud, Rashi, and Tosfos. He also wrote the Yamshal Shlomo, in which he analyzes early authorities' understanding of Talmudic passages and reaches halachic conclusions. Though the Marshal wrote Yamshal Shlomo on 16 Talmudic tractates, only 7 of these are extant. Let's talk about the Maram. Meir ben Rav Gedalia, the Maram, known as the Maram of Lublin, named his Talmudic commentary Meir Einai Chachamim, Enlightening the Eyes of the Wise. It is printed in the back of the standard editions of the Talmud, alongside that of the Marshal. This commentary gives clear explanations of many passages of the Talmud and Tosfos. Maram also wrote halachic responses that are frequently cited by later authorities. There is a tradition that the Marshal had blessed Maram's father, Rav Gershon, that the latter's wife would give birth to a son who would light up the Jewish diaspora with his wisdom. By the time he was 30, Maram was both Rav and Rosh Yeshiva of the large Jewish community of Krakow. Among his most prominent disciples was Rav Yishayahu Horowitz the Shiloh. Then we have the Marsha. Rabbi Shmuel Elezer Idol's commentary on the Talmud is printed in the back of standard editions of the Talmud, above those of the Maram and the Marshal. His commentary is divided into two parts, Chedushe Halochas, which focuses primarily on Tosfos, and Chedushe Agadas, which provides profound explanations of the stories and ethical teachings of the Talmud. He is known as Edel's in tribute to his mother-in-law Edel, who supported his yeshiva in Poznan for 20 years. Let's talk about the Tosfos. Yontif, Rabbi Yontif Liebman Heller, was a student of the Maral. As a young man, he was appointed to the prestigious position of judge of the rabbinical court in Prague. He then served as rabbi of various cities, gaining a reputation as a fighter for justice who refused to show special favor to the wealthy and influential community leadership. In 1644, Rabbi Yontif was appointed chief rabbi of Prague, where he implemented a policy of demanding that the rich pay a higher proportion of the government taxes imposed upon the Jewish community than the poor. His commentary on the Mishnah, Tosfos Yontif, provides an in-depth analysis of the Mishnah. He also wrote many other works. Let's talk about the Mizrahi, Torah commentator. The Mizrahi is a super commentary, a commentary to the commentary that analyzes Rashi's commentary on the Chumash, providing sources and resolving apparent difficulties. Rav Eliyahu Mizrahi, who authored the work, was the chief rabbi of Turkey, where he was active in assisting refugees from the Spanish Inquisition. In addition to being a leading Jewish Torah scholar, he was recognized authority in mathematics, astronomy, and philosophy, and wrote books on these subjects. In addition to his Rashi's commentary, he wrote Responsa and Navalei. All this that we're talking about is from the years 1500 to the year 1600. Now we're going to talk about the Bach. Rabbi Yoel Sirkis was rabbi in Krakow for 21 years. He was a well-to-do and personally supported a number of the students in his yeshiva, Beis Chodesh, of which the Bach is an acronym. His commentary on the Arba Turim appears in all standard editions of the Tur. He also corrected errors in Talmudic text and wrote responsa and works on Kabbalah. Then we have the Taz. Rabbi David Halevi was an outstanding disciple of the Bach and became his son-in-law. His commentary on the Orach Chaim and Yoredeya portions of Shulchan Aruch Turei Zov, that's why the name is acronym Taz, appears on the innermost column of each page of the standard Shulchan Aruch. He was one of the thousands of refugees who were forced to flee the Khmelnytsky massacres, first to Lublin, then to Moravia. Following the Cossack uprising, he returned to Lemberg, where he served as Rav until his death in 1667. Towards the end of his life, he sent his son and his stepson to investigate Shabtai Tzvi's claim to be the Mashiach. Let's talk about the Shach. One of Rabbi Shabtai Cohen's enduring contributions to Judaism was made at a relatively young age. He began his work, the Sifsei Cohen, commentary on the Yoredeya portion of the Shulchan Aruch at the age of 18. It was completed and published when he was only 24 years old, and was recognized and referred to even by his senior contemporaries. Indeed, Rabbi Shabtai was a genius who, at the age of 12, was accepted to the yeshiva of Rabbi Yeshua ben Yosef of Krakow. Some years after publishing his first work, he wrote a commentary on the unit of Shulchan Aruch dealing with civil laws, Koshen Mishpat. These commentaries are printed alongside the text in all standard editions of the Shulchan Aruch. Shabtai's personal life was marred by the tragedies of the Khmelnytsky massacres, which he survived as a refugee. Though his life was short, he passed away at the age of 41. His works continue to have an impact even to this day. Let's talk about the Magen Avraham. Rabbi Avraham Gumbrenner's father was killed in the Khmelnytsky massacres. For many years, Rabbi Avraham taught young school children until the residents of Kalish, where he was living, recognized his great scholarship and appointed him one of the city's dayanim, rabbinic judges. His Magen Avraham is a comprehensive treatment of the Orach Chaim section of the Shulchan Aruch. It appears in the outer column in standard editions of the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote Zayis Renan, an extensive commentary on Yalkut Shimoni. Let's go to the year 5461, 1700, and let's talk about Rav Yehuda HaChassid. A dramatic journey began when Rav Yehuda left Shtetlitz, Poland, with 30 families to resettle in Yerushalayim. The group traveled to Hungary, Germany, and Italy, were inspired by Rav Yehuda's charismatic personality and sense of mission. Additional families joined him. By the time they left for Yerushalayim, Rav Yehuda HaChassid had a following of 1,000 men, women, and children. This was the largest aliyah of Ashkenazic Jews in centuries. Half of the party perished during the journey. The survivors arrived on the Wednesday, the 4th of Cheshvan. Tragically, Rav Yehuda passed away the next Monday. He had lived in Yerushalayim for less than a week. The people who accompanied Rav Yehuda tried but failed to establish a permanent community. They incurred huge debts to the Arabs in order to acquire living quarters and food. After repeated unsuccessful attempts to get the debts repaid, the Arabs burst into the shul, pillaging the shul. They then used the area as a garbage dump. The Ashkenazic Jews were banished from the city, their homes converted into Arab shops. The Arabs considered all Ashkenazic Jews responsible for the unpaid debt. They harassed Ashkenazic Jews and ordered that no Ashkenazic Jew be permitted to take up residence in Yerushalayim as long as the debt remained unpaid. This decree prevented Ashkenazic Jews from living in Yerushalayim for over 100 years, until 1820, when the students of the Gaon of Vilna repaid the debt. At about the same time, 1754-61, we have the emergence of the Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Yisrael ben Elezer, later known as the Baal Shem Tov, was born in Elul in 1700. Orphaned at a very young age, Yisrael was always inspired by his father's last words to him: "Remember, Hashem is with you, and therefore never be afraid." Rabbi Yisrael became a teacher's assistant in the town Cheder. As part of his job, he would pick up the children and escort them to school. The children loved going to school with him, as he would sing with them as they marched. He married at the age of 20 and spent many years isolated in the mountains. There he studied Torah, becoming a great scholar, knowledgeable in Talmud, Medrash, Tanakh, and Jewish law. In addition, he studied the deep mysteries of the Torah in Kabbalah. Rabbi Yisrael's spiritual attainments were great, and he was able to cure the sick through Kabbalistic amulets and blessings. He became known as a miracle worker and was acknowledged as a very holy Jew. People called him Baal Shem Tov, the master of the good name. All this time, Rabbi Yisrael kept his greatness hidden and concentrated on personal growth. When he was 36 years old, he began to reveal his new way of serving Hashem to the Jews of Ukraine. His teachings, called Chassidus, were firmly rooted in Torah and stressed the emotional dimension of Judaism and the need for joy in the service of Hashem. His approach succeeded in strengthening the spirit of many Jews, and he attracted disciples from throughout Greater Poland and beyond. Within decades, Chassidus has spread from Mizbos, the small state where the Baal Shem Tov lived, to Poland, Russia, Hungary, and Eastern Europe, and even to Lithuania, where it was opposed by the Gaon of Vilna. By the turn of the 20th century, there were millions of Hasidic Jews. Today, there are large, vibrant Hasidic communities throughout the world. Though Hasidic teachings attracted many great Torah scholars, it was embraced particularly by the poor and humble Jews who were touched by the Baal Shem Tov's boundless love for them. He emphasized age-old Torah concepts, the importance of praying with feeling and doing mitzvahs with joy, Hashem's love for every Jew, and the belief that a holy tzaddik can offer advice and help to his followers and bring them closer to Hashem. Chassidim used singing and dancing to inspire themselves to be better Jews. The Baal Shem Tov also encouraged the study of certain aspects of Kabbalah. Because of the importance of Eretz Yisrael, he himself attempted a trip there, but returned to Europe unable to complete the voyage. He passed away on Shavuos in the English year 1716, the Hebrew year 5520. Through his Talmidim, Hasidus continued to spread and grow. The disciple who succeeded the Baal Shem Tov as leader was Reb Dov Baer, known as the Maggid Mizritch. It was he who became the teacher of great disciples who spread Hasidus throughout Eastern Europe. Other disciples of the Baal Shem Tov include Rabbi Yaakov Yosef of Polom, author of the Toldos Yaakov Yosef, in which the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov were first put into print, and Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Witebsk, who emigrated to Eretz Yisrael with 300 Hasidim. The teachings of the Baal Shem Tov gave Jews the courage to stand firm, proud, and fiercely committed to Judaism, despite the hardships of poverty and anti-Semitism they suffered in Christian Europe. Let's talk about the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was born in 1720, and in the Hebrew year 5481. A true child genius is rare. There is perhaps one in each generation. When Elio ben Rav Shlomo Zalman was born on the first day of Pesach in the year 5481, the Jewish people were blessed with a child genius who was one in many centuries and whose influence and contributions continue to guide, enlighten, and inspire. Commonly referred to as the Vilna Gaon, the genius of Vilna, the Gra, in the abbreviation for Gaon Rav Eliyahu, never had a position as a Rav of a congregation or of a city. However, through his students, his writings, and his personal example, he became the teacher of the Jewish people, and he influenced all the generations of Jews from his time to the present to live lives dedicated exclusively to Torah study and the pursuit of Torah knowledge. His best-known student of Chaim Volozhiner, encouraged by the Gra, founded the yeshiva in Volozhin, which became the model for all of today's yeshivas. During the Vilna Gaon's lifetime, the Hasidic movement was growing throughout Eastern Europe. The Gra was opposed to the teachings of Hasidus and the changes in practice that the Hasidim were advocating. He even signed a ban against them. As a result, the Hasidic movement attracted much opposition as it spread into Lithuania. The Gaon's written legacy includes commentaries on virtually all areas of the written and oral law, including the Chumash, Mishnah, Talmud, Zohar, and other Kabbalistic works, and the Shulchan Aruch. In addition, he pointed out printers' errors that had become common in the Talmud and the Medrash text. His Ayil Meshulash is a work on geometry. He passed away on the fifth day of Sukkot in 1797. When only a child, not yet 6 years old, Eliyahu stepped up to the front of the great shul in Vilna and delivered a Talmudic speech of such brilliance and magnificence that it astonished the entire congregation. Very soon, he suppressed his teachers and began learning on his own. Studying day and night, he devoted his entire life to the study of all branches of Torah knowledge. In order to better understand certain areas of Torah, he also mastered mathematics, natural science, and astronomy. He towered far beyond all Torah scholars in his generation and was the acknowledged Torah giant of his age. Despite his mental acuity, photographic memory, and respected family background, the Gaon remained humble. Shortly after his marriage, he decided to journey through Europe disguised as a poor man, dressed as an impoverished Jew. He traveled and wandered for 5 years. Decades later, towards the end of his life, the Gaon once again left Vilna. His intense love for Eretz Yisrael inspired him to attempt a long and dangerous journey. Unfortunately, after 2 months, circumstances compelled him to return to Vilna, his journey aborted. After the Gaon's death, some of his students completed their mentor's journey, immigrating to Eretz Yisrael in the first decades of the 1800s. Now, did you know that when the Gra was a youngster, he wouldn't play seesaw? He disliked a game where in order to get to the top, you had to push someone else down. Another interesting fact about the Vilna Gaon: a Berlin professor, stumped by a particular complex mathematical problem, presented it to Gra, who immediately solved it. Another interesting fact is, surrounded by the Russian army, the Jews of Vilna gathered in the shul to pray for heavenly protection. The Gra told them that no one would be hurt. At that moment, a cannonball hit the building but caused only minimal damage to the roof. Now, the Gro knew Tanakh so well that he could say it by heart backwards. And it says, it's brought down that in the last moments of his life, the Gro took hold of his sisters and cried, "How great is reward for this mitzvah, bought for just a few pennies, but after a man's death, all the money in the world can't buy the reward of a mitzvah." At the Gro's request, he was buried next to Graf Potiki, a righteous convert who took the Jewish name Avram ben Avram, the son of a Polish count. Avram converted to Judaism and was burnt at the stake by the church when he refused to return to Catholicism. The Gro never slept for more than 2 hours a day and never for more than half an hour at a time. Let's talk about Rabbi Moshe Chaim Zatto de Ramchal. He was born in Italy in 1707, but he was 33 years old when his very popular work on Jewish ethics, Mesillas Yeshorim, The Path of the Just, was published. Those that would like to learn Mesillas Yeshorim, it is available online at EnglishTorahTapes.com. It's only 9 shiurim, but a complete translation of Mesillas Yeshorim is available. You can also download all of our shiurim on our website so you can listen to it while traveling. And the Chafetz Chaim, based on the Pasuk in Shir Shirim, says that one who learns Torah while traveling gets 5 times the reward of one who learns Torah in the Beis Medrash. So if anybody would like, all the shiurim online at EnglishTorahTapes.com are available to listen to for free or download and listen while you walk, travel, whatever you do. In any case, the Mesillas Yeshorim explores man's purpose and offers guidance on how one can attain spiritual fulfillment. The Mesillas Yeshorim was reprinted innumerable times and translated into many languages. At the turn of the 20th century, it could be found in Jewish homes throughout the world, a classic text that was universally accepted. Now, going back to the time when the Moshe Chaim Zatto Ramchal was born, again we mentioned he was born in 1707, as a child he received a broad Torah education and was considered a genius by his family and teachers. While still in his teens, he wrote books on Hebrew language, grammar and usage, and rhetoric that drew comprehensively from all the books of the Torah, the Talmud and biblical commentaries. At about that time he began to study Kabbalah, the mystical writings of the Zohar, and the writings of the students of the holy Ari of Sfas. The Ramchal, as he was known, gathered a group of about 10 students whose purpose was to study all facets of the Torah, including the Zohar, in a pure and holy environment. When the Ramchal was 20 years old in Magad, a heavenly messenger came to teach him the secrets of the Torah, which he was instructed to write down and teach to his students. When the rabbis of Venice heard about the Ramchal's group studying the Zohar and his claim that he was taught by a Magad, they wrote to the Ramchal, whose mentor, Rabbi Yishayahu Basan, protesting the Ramchal's activities. They suspected the Ramchal was a secret follower of the false Mashiach Shabshai Tzvi, who had died in 1676, but whose mystical messianic movement was still very much alive. The Ramchal, however, was not a follower of Shabshai Tzvi and did not cease his study of Kabbalah. However, he was forced to hand over many of his writings to Rabbi Basan. These works were hidden from public view and were not published. A strong controversy developed around the Ramchal and his teachings. Many rabbis believed that a person who was so young and who was learning outside of Eretz Yisrael should not study the Zohar and could not have had a Magid speak to him. The Ramchal pointed out that Ari learned from a Magid at a young age while still in Egypt, and that Rabbi Yosef Karo had also learned from a Magid while living in Turkey. As a result of this controversy, Ramchal left Padua and moved with his family first to Frankfurt and then to Amsterdam. He supported himself by working in the diamond trade for a few hours a day and learning Torah the rest of the time. In Amsterdam, he wrote the book that was to become, long after his lifetime, the most widely accepted Musar ethical work of the last 150 years, Mesillas Yeshorim, which we already mentioned. In 1743, at the age of 36, the Ramchal moved with his family to Akro in Eretz Yisrael, HaKohen Eretz Yisrael, believing that his Kabbalah studies and teachings could reach greater heights in the Holy Land. In 1747, a plague struck the city of Acre, and Ramchal, who was only 40 at the time, and his family perished. He was buried on the hilltop outside Tiberias, near the grave of Rabbi Akiva. After the controversy quieted down, and with the passing of the Shabbat Tzvi movement, the Jewish people rediscovered the Ramchal and began to study his books. The Vilna Gaon was so impressed with Mesilas Yesharim that he wanted to leave Vilna to meet its author. But Ramchal was no longer alive. In the mid-1800s, of Yisrael Salanter, founder of the Muslim movement, said that all the Muslim works are good, but that the Mesilas Yesharim was the best. Many of the Hasidic Rebbes similarly praised the Ramchal and his writings. More recently, Rabbi Chaim Friedlander, the Mashkiach Toponovich Yeshiva, wrote glasses on and arranged for the publication of several manuscripts of the Ramchal that had been held in libraries for nearly 200 years. To date, over 20 Rabbi Moshe Chaim Zatzal's works have been published, and he is acknowledged throughout the Jewish world as one of the outstanding Torah giants of the 18th century. Let's go to the year 5511 in the Hebrew calendar and 1751 in the English calendar. We're going to talk about Rav Yaakov of Emden and the amulets of Rabbi Yonason Eishbeschutz. Rabbi Yonason Eishbeschutz's great Torah scholarship had earned him the position of chief rabbi of the Jewish community of Metz, and then of the three sister cities of Alona, Hamburg, and Wandsbek. In addition to his vast knowledge of Talmud and Jewish law, he was also learned in matters of Kabbalah, the mystical aspects of the Torah. As the community's Rav, he was often approached by people in need, and he wrote Kabbalistic amulets for them to wear. These amulets came to the attention of Rav Yaakov of Emden from Holland, whose father, the Chacham Tzvi, had been one of the most outspoken opponents of Shabtai Tzvi. Continuing his father's tradition, he worked tirelessly to stamp out any remnants of Shabtai Tzvi's influence among the Jews. Rabbi Yaakov, an outstanding scholar in his own right, examined some of the amulets, and he became convinced that Rabbi Yonason believed in Shabtai Tzvi. Rabbi Yaakov demanded that Rabbi Yonason Eishbeschutz be removed from his office as chief rabbi and be disqualified from the rabbinate. The resulting dispute as to whether Rabbi Yonason was innocent or guilty of believing in Shabtai Tzvi is one of the famous as well as sad controversies of the 18th century. The affair became so public that the King of Denmark personally involved himself in the dispute. Though Rabbi Yonason was declared innocent and remained the chief rabbi, the matter was not laid to rest. Despite their differences, both are recognized as righteous men of the highest order, whose dispute was motivated by the quest for truth and for the good of the Jewish community. Both Rabbi Yaakov of Emden and Rabbi Yonason Eishbeschutz have left rich legacies of halachic and homiletic writings. Indeed, Rabbi Eishbeschutz's Urim V'Tumim and Kirisei U'Pelesi are masterpieces of halachic literature. But it's interesting, through strange circumstances, Rabbi Yonason Eishbeschutz and Rabbi Yaakov Emden, even though they had different ideas, are actually buried next to each other. Perhaps a divine way of showing that their fight had truly been a Shem Shemaim for the sake of heaven. Let's do some famous commentators of in the 1700s. We continue now with the Metzudas David and Metzudas Tzion. They were Tanakh commentators. These two important commentaries from the Nevi'im Kesuvim, the written books of the prophets and the writings, are printed in standard editions of these books. They are clearly written and simple to use. Metzudas David explains the basic meaning of the Pesukim, while Metzudas Tzion explains difficult words used in the text. They were published by Rabbi Yechiel Hillel Altshuler, who completed the commentary his father, Rabbi David Altshuler, had begun. Let's talk about the Pachad Yitzchak. The Pachad Yitzchak, the first Talmudic encyclopedia, was written by Rabbi Isaac Lempronti, one of the great Torah scholars of Italian Jewry. The author alphabetically arranges concepts and topics discussed in the Talmud and presents the opinions and interpretations of his rabbinic predecessors and contemporaries. The Bnei Yeshua, Rabbi Yaakov Yeshua Falk, rabbi of Frankfurt am Main, lay in the rubble of a building that had blown up when gunpowder stored within it had exploded. Though his family did not survive, Rabbi Yaakov Yeshua did. He wrote his famous book, Bnei Yeshua, to show his gratitude to Hashem for saving him from almost certain death. In this work, which is a staple of advanced Talmud study, he analyzes the Rashi and Tosfos on the Talmud and offers insights, highlights, questions, and resolutions. Let's talk about Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger was an outstanding scholar and acknowledged leader of his generation. He was known not only for his vast knowledge, but for his awesome piety and modesty as well. Even during the lifetime of the Gaon of Vilna, Rav Eiger was offered the position of Rav of Vilna. His contemporaries on the Talmud are required study for anyone who seeks to understand the Talmud in depth. His hundreds of halachic responses are published in She'elos U'Tshuvos, Rav Akiva Eiger. His glosses on the Shulchan Aruch are still studied intensively. The Gilyon HaShas, his glosses on the Talmud, offers cross-references to Talmudic and post-Talmudic sources, often posing difficult questions or raising apparent contradictions. The questions he raises continue to challenge the greatest Talmud scholars who try to find resolutions to these issues. In addition, his Talmudic novelae are considered paradigms of clear and analytical thought. Did you know that Rabbi Akiva Eiger once spoke harshly to a student? Later, the student moved and Rabbi Akiva Eiger did not know his whereabouts. 15 years later, teacher and student met and Rabbi Akiva Eiger remembered to ask the young man's forgiveness. As Rav of his city, Rabbi Akiva Eiger was in charge of the local hospital. For his work, the government gave him an award. In addition to being an extraordinary Talmud scholar, Rabbi Akiva Eiger was a man of great kindness and piety. Here is a short story told about him. Once a carriage in which he was riding fell into a ditch during a storm. The wagon driver stepped into the mud and water and pushed the wagon back onto the road. Rabbi Akiva Eiger offered the wagon driver a pair of dry socks. The driver thanked his passenger. Now he wouldn't have to finish the trip in wet socks. It was only at the end of the journey that the driver realized Rabbi Akiva Eiger had given him his own pair of socks. Let's go now to the year, Hebrew year 5513, the English year 1753. So the leader of Hasidus after the Baal Shem Tov was Rabbi Dov Ber, as we mentioned earlier, known as the Maggid Mishris. Legend has it that suffering from poor health, he came to the Baal Shem Tov for a cure. He was already an outstanding Talmud scholar, Kabbalist, and Maggid, a preacher, when he chose to become a student of the Baal Shem Tov. Though he lived only 13 years after the passing of the Baal Shem Tov, the Maggid developed the great disciples who spread Hasidus throughout Eastern Europe. His many students became great Hasidic rebbes and founded Hasidic dynasties throughout Europe. We're going to spend just a few minutes talking about the Hasidic rebbes and the dynasties. There's no end to how much there is, and so we're just going to spend about 10 minutes to go through some of the Hasidic rebbes and dynasties. Again, Rabbi Shmuel Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidus, was born in 1698 and died in 1760. Udo, his daughter, a wise and righteous woman to whom he entrusted many confidential matters. So we have Rabbi Moshe Chaim Ephraim, the son of Udel, the grandson of Baal Shem Tov, born in 1748 and died in 1800, grew up in the house of the Baal Shem Tov, author of the Degel Machne Ephraim and the Chumash, a primary source for the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, served as Rav in Sedilikov most of his adult life. Then we have another son of Yudel, Rav Boruch, the grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, born in 1753, died in 1811. As a child, he was beloved by the Baal Shem Tov. After the passing of his grandfather, he became Rebbe in Mishbetzitz and was influential in the spreading of Hasidus. Then we have Rav Nachman of Breslov. He was the son of Feger, grandson of Yudel, the great grandson of the Baal Shem Tov, born in 1772, died in 1811. Although his Hasidim did not choose a successor to him, Breslov Hasidim remained strong and growing. Rabbi Avraham Gershon Kitover was a brother-in-law of the Baal Shem Tov, founder of the Hasidic community in Yerushalayim. He first traveled there to Israel in 1742, went back to Europe, and then returned permanently to Yerushalayim in 1747. The first generation of disciples of the Baal Shem Tov. We have Rabbi Dov Ber, the Magid Mishutvitz, born in 1704, died in 1773. A primary disciple of the Baal Shem Tov and the successor as the leader of world Hasidus, became the most influential leader in the Hasidic world, spread Hasidus by sending his disciples to lead Jewish communities throughout Europe. Then we have Rabbi Yaakov Yosef HaKohen of Polnovoy, died in 1784, known as the favored disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, with whom he came to study as an established rabbi. He developed a close friendship with the Maggid. His primary work, told us Yaakov Yosef, was the first to present the Baal Shem Tov's teachings in print. Then we have Reb Nachum of Chernobyl, born in 1730, died in 1798, author Maor Inayim, disciple of Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid, founder of the Chernobyl Hasidic dynasty. Then we have Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Vitebsk, born once again we have Reb Nachum Mendel of Vitebsk, born in 1730, died in 1788, disciple of the Baal Shem Tov and the Maggid. In 1777 led a group of 300 Hasidim to settle near Tisrael, first in Tzfas and later in Tveria. Then we have the disciples of the Maggid, Reb Aaron HaGadol of Karlin, born in 1736, died in 1772, spread Hasidus in Lithuania, founder of the Karlin stolen Hasidic dynasty. Then we have Reb Shneur Zalman Schneerson of Layadi, born in 1745, died in 1813, founder of the Chabad approach to Hasidic thought. He authored many works, including the Kutei Amoraim Tanya, on the basic philosophy of Chabad and Halachic Code, which has come to be known as Shulchan Aruch HaRav. Then we have Rabbi Elimelech of Lizhinsk, known as the Rebbe Reb Melech, died in 1786, author of Noam Elimelech, teacher of many of the next generation of Hasidic leaders. Then we have Rabbi Meshulam Zusha of Hanipoli, known as the Rebbe Reb Zusha, died in 1800, brother of the Rebbe Reb Elimelech. Then we have Rabbi Levi Yitzchok of Arditchev, born in 1740, died in 1810. He was a prominent Rav before becoming a Chazan. He authored Kedushas Levi and the Torah and was known as the great defender of the Jewish people with his loving prayers on their behalf. Then we have Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz of Frankfurt, born in 1730 and died in 1805, author of many works on Talmud and Shulchan Aruch, including Sefer HaFlaw, Sefer HaKana and Panim Meiros. He was also a mentor of the Chasam Sofer. Then we have Rav Shmelka Levi Horowitz of Nikolsburg, who died in 1778, the brother of Rav Pinchas Halevi, taught many of the Rebbes of his own generation. Then we have Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchok Horowitz, the Chose of Lublin, born in 1745, died in 1815. The one who brought Hasidus to Poland, many of the next generation's Rebbes were his disciples. Then we have the Rabbi Yisrael Hopstein of Koznitz, known as the Koznitz Maggid, born in 1726, died in 1815, the author of Avodas Yisrael. Now we're going to talk about disciples of Rabbi Memelech of Lizhinsk. The Chose of Lublin and the Koznitz Maggid were also disciples of the Rebbe Rabbi Memelech. They, together with Rabbi Avraham Yeshua Heschel of Apte and Rabbi Nachum Mendel of Rumenov, spread Hasidus throughout Poland. And we have Rabbi Avraham Yeshua Heschel of Apte, born in 1755, died in 1825, author of the Sefer called Ohev Yisrael. We have Reb Nachum Mendel of Rimonov, died in 1815, author of many Svarim books, including Menachem Tzion, Divrei Menachem, and the Teres Menachem. Then we have Reb Naftali Tzvi of Rupshitz, born in 1760, and died in 1827, disciple of the Rebbe Reb Melech and the Chozer, author of the Zera Kodesh. Now we have the disciples of the Chozer of Lublin. We have Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchok of Peshishcha, known as the Yid HaKodesh, the Holy Jew born in 1766, died in 1824, served as the Rosh Yeshiva in Apta, where Rabbi Moshe Leib Sasov attracted him to Hasidus. He ultimately settled in Peshishcha. Then we have Rabbi Simcha Bunim of Peshishcha, born in 1767, died in 1827. Although a student of the Chozer, he was closest to the Yid HaKodesh and eventually assumed the leadership of the Besichsha after his master's passing. Then we have Rav Moshe Teitelbaum of Uhel, born in 1759, who died in 1841. The author of Yismach Moshe and the Torah, he was among those primarily responsible for the spread of Hasidus in Hungary. Then we have Rav Sholom Rokeach of Belz, born in 1779, died in 1855, author of Meister Rokeach and the founder of the Belzer Hasidic dynasty. Then we have Rabbi Menachem Mendel of Kutsk, born in 1787, died in 1859, disciple of the Chozer, the Yid HaKodesh, and of Simcha Bunim of Peshishcha. He is known for his pursuit of truth, shunning of honor, and acute insights into human nature. And we have Rabbi Yitzchak Meir Rottenberg, the Alter of Ger, born in 1799, died in 1866, student of the Kashnitzer Magid, Rabbi Simcha Bunim of Peshishcha, and the Kutzker Rebbe, founder of the Gera Hasidic dynasty, author of the Sefer Chadushei Arim. Then we have Rabbi Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, born in 1783, died in 1841, wrote several forum, including Pnei Yisocho, Agra, the Kala, Derech, Pekud Tuchor, and Mayon Gonim. Other major rebbes of the period, we have Rabbi Moshe Leib of Sasov, born in 1745, died in 1807, a disciple of Rabbi Shmelke of Nikolsburg, known for his boundless love for every Jew. Then we have Rabbi Yehuda Leib Eger of Lublin, born in 1815, died in 1888, grandson of Rabbi Kiva Eger, disciple of the Kutzker Rebbe, though the scion of a family of misnagdim, opponents of Hasidus, he was attracted to the movement. Known as Rabbi Leibel, he was the Rebbe in Lublin. Among his many works are Torus Emes and Imre Emes. Then we have Rabbi Avraham Bornstein of Shachoshov, born in 1838, died in 1910. Son-in-law of the Kutzker Rebbe, his halachic works include Egle Tal and Avnei Nezer. Then we have Rav Tzedek HaKohen of Lublin, born in 1824, died in 1900. A student of Rabbi Leibel Eiger, author of many profound works on Jewish thought based on Kabbalah and Hasidic teachings. Then we have Rav Chaim Halberstam of Sanz, born in 1793, died in 1876. Founder of the Sanz dynasty of Hasidus, he was an acknowledged halachic authority and the author of the Divrei Chaim. Then we have Rav Nachum Mendel Hager of Kosov, born in 1768, died in 1826. Disciple of Rabbi Moshe Leib Sasov, author of Ahavas Shalom, he's the forerunner of the Vizhnitz dynasty. Then we have Rabbi Israel of Ruzin, born in 1797, died in 1851, great-grandson of the Magad Meshritz, founder of the Ruzin dynasty, considered by many to be the leader of his generation. And there's no end, we can keep on going, so we're going to stop here of the Hasidic Rebbes, and we're going to go back now to more famous commentators of the 1700s, Torah commentators, the famous Ma'am Loes. This compiling of works was written in Ladin originally, the language of Sephardic Jews. It is an encyclopedic commentary on Tanakh, written in a style that brings the narrative to life and explains the halachas discussed in the Torah. The Ma'am Loes became particularly popular among those Sephardic Jews who found Hebrew language commentaries difficult. It had a great impact on the Sephardic community, strengthening their Judaism. In the 1970s, it was finally translated into both Hebrew and in English versions, which immediately became popular. The commentary on Chumash Bereishis in the portion of the book of Chumash Mos was written by Rabbi Yaakov Kuli. After his death, others completed the writing following Rabbi Kuli's style. And if anyone is interested in learning Amloes on Tanakh and on including Chumash, all the parshas, you can do so by visiting us online at EnglishTorahTapes.com. Amloes never completed all of Tanakh, but the rest of Tanakh is being done with a commentary with Das Sofim. But whatever the Ma'am Lois did do is available online. Now we're going to talk about the Sifsei Chachamim. Of the hundreds of commentaries that explain Rashi and Chumash, the one that has achieved the greatest popularity is the Sifsei Chachamim. It was written by Reb Shabtai Das, a very learned printer of Jewish books, who was also a noted bibliographer and chazan. At the age of 71, he was imprisoned for a short time by Christian authorities for printing Hebrew books which they claimed disparaged the church. He was later vindicated and released. One of the famous halachic commentators is the Chacham Tzvi, a collection of responses, letters answering halachic inquiries by Reb Tzvi Ashkenazi. Though born to an Ashkenazi family after studying in Budapest, he pursued his studies in Sephardic lands. He settled in Constantinople, where the title Chacham, the Sephardic term for rabbi, was bestowed upon him. He served as rabbi in numerous cities, most famously as Rav of the Ashkenazic community of Amsterdam, where there were both Ashkenazic and Sephardic communities. While there, he fought against the influence of the followers of Shabtai Tzvi, as his son, Rav Yaakov of Emden, did later on. Let's talk about the Noda B'Yehuda. The author of the Noda B'Yehuda, Rabbi Cheskel Landau, was chief rabbi of Prague. He was recognized as a leading halachic authority of his generation. Questions were sent to him from communities all over the world. Many of his responses were published as Shailos Tshuvos Noda B'Yehuda. The first volume was published in 1776 at the dawn of the Emancipation Movement, and it is one of the first books to deal with Jewish law at a time when traditional Jews began to confront the challenges of greater cultural freedom and exposure. Rabbi Landau addresses such questions as whether Jews are permitted to wear Western-style clothing and the permissibility of autopsies. It is a classic text which is often referred to by rabbis even today. The Noda B'Yehuda, as Rabbi Landau became known, was a valiant defender of traditional Judaism, battling the Enlightenment, a movement which promoted the abandonment of elements of traditional practice in an effort to embrace Western culture. He had a close relationship with Emperor Franz Joseph No. II of Austria. Rabbi Yecheskel Landau was once added an additional day to Pesach, saving the Jews of Prague. This is what happened. Over the Pesach Yom Tov holiday, the Jews had no flour or chametz, so the day after Pesach they would buy the bread from a bakery owned by Gentiles. One year, a group of anti-Semites plotted to kill the Jews by poisoning the bread baked after Pesach. A Gentile, whom Rabbi Landau had once helped, learned of the plot and told Rabbi Landau about it. On the final day of Pesach, Rabbi Landau told the Jews of Prague that an error had been made in the calendar, and they had started Pesach observance a day early. Pesach, he said, would actually be celebrated for another full day. The murderous baker waited for his Jewish customers, but they did not come. In the meanwhile, the Rav of Cheskel Landau reported the scheme to the authorities, who arrested the perpetrators. Talk about the Chaya Odom and the Chochmas Odom. These are definitive summaries of the Or HaChaim and the Yoredeya sections of the Shulchan Aruch. Their concise format and straightforward style made these works easier to use by the masses than the comprehensive Shulchan Aruch and its commentators. They were written by Rabbi Avraham Danzig, who was a rabbinical judge in the Vilna court during the lifetime of the Vilna Gaon, under whom he studied. The Ketzolos HaChoshen. This classic example of Talmudic scholarship is studied intensely in yeshivas and is the basis of many advanced Talmudic lectures. Its author, Rabbi Aryeh Leib HaKohen Heller, taught Talmud in Lemberg and later became Rav of Stry, Poland. The Ketzolos HaChoshen is a commentary on Choshen Mishpat, the section of Shulchan Aruch which deals with business and monetary matters. Rav Aryeh Leib also wrote Avnei Miluim, a commentary on Evin Ezer, the section of Shulchan Aruch which deals with matters of marriage and divorce, and Shev Shemaitza, a collection of brilliantly lengthy essays on the principles of possession and proof in Jewish law. Another sefer that's well known was the Nesivos HaMishpat by Rabbi Yaakov Lorberbaum of Lisa. It's an integral part of advanced yeshiva studies. It is a commentary on the Choshen Mishpat section of the Shulchan Aruch. This commentary often challenges the premises found in Ketzolos HaChoshen, and the author of that work responds to these challenges in his Mechove Nesivos. Together, these works provide scholars and students with an in-depth knowledge of an analysis of Jewish monetary and legal matters as set forth in the Shulchan Aruch. Rabbi Lorberbaum, a great-grandson of the Chacham Tzvi, also produced many other halachic and homiletic works. In the 1700s, two of the famous Rabbanim who lived in Yerushalayim, one was the Chidor, and the other one was the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Chidor, Rabbi Chaim Yosef David Azulai, a Sephardic sage, wrote scores of works on topics ranging from halacha and Kabbalah to rabbinic biography and bibliography. When he was 29 years old, he was sent to the diaspora to raise funds for the Hebrew Jewish community. For 5 years, he traveled to distant European lands such as Germany, Italy, and even England, where he toured the Tower of London. He returned to Yerushalayim for a short time and once again set out, finally settling in Italy. While in his travels, he served as Rav in various communities, met with the leading Torah scholars of his day, and researched manuscripts found in libraries and collections throughout Europe. In addition to their own significance, the Chidah's work serves as a valuable source for the material in these manuscripts, many of which were never published. His opinions on Jewish law and customs are accepted by numerous Sephardic communities and inform the decisions of many Ashkenazic rabbis. Now, even though the Chidor, I believe, died out of Yerushalayim, but his bones were brought back to burial in Yerushalayim in Har Menuchas, and if you go to Har Menuchas Cemetery today, you can see the kever of the Chidor. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh. Reb Chaim ben Attar was born in Morocco and spent the last years of his life in Yerushalayim, where he opened a yeshiva. He is the author of the Or HaChaim commentary on the Torah, a profound work which often draws on Kabbalah to explain the basic ideas of the Pesukim, the verses, and to resolve difficulties. The Or HaChaim is recognized as one of the basic Torah commentaries. Reb Chaim ben Attar was also a great halachic authority in Rosh Yeshiva. He is generally referred to as the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the Holy Or HaChaim, in tribute to his greatness and piety. Now, what's interesting is that 2.5 centuries after the death of the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the Jordanians, who had captured the Mount of Olives in Israel's 1948 War of Independence, decided to build a road right through the ancient Jewish cemetery, desecrating many graves. When the road work reached the grave of Reb Chaim ben Attar, the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, the tractor miraculously flipped over, the driver was killed, and the project subsequently abandoned. It's interesting also that Or HaChaim's grave on Mount of Olives is visited, especially in his yahrzeit, the anniversary of his death, by thousands of Jews praying their request be answered. We mentioned earlier some of the Hasidic Rebbes from Poland. We're going to spend some time now and go into it a little bit more and bring down some of their thoughts. Again, this is the period between 1750 and 1850. So again, we can talk about Rabbi Melech and Rabbi Zusha. These brothers who spread Hasidus in Poland and Galicia were disciples of the Maggid Mishritz. Rebbe Lemelech was known as the Rebbe Reb Melech. Every night before going to sleep, Rebbe Melech would take any money left in his house and give it away to charity. Among his works are Tzeitzei Katan, the small list, a 17-point program on how to be a good Jew, and Noam Elimelech, a classic Hasidic work on Torah. Reb Zusha was a tzaddik whose kindness and modesty were legendary. So Reb Melech said, I know I will go to heaven because when the heavenly court asked me, did you learn, pray, and do good as you should have, I will say, nope, nope, nope. The court will then pass judgment, saying that because I told the truth, I deserve to enter heaven. When Reb Zusha lay on his deathbed, he told his disciples that he was not afraid of being asked why he wasn't as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. The heavenly court, he said, doesn't expect him to be that great. Instead, they will ask him, Zusha, why weren't you Zusha? Why didn't you achieve everything that you, Zusha, could have achieved? Then the Chose, the seer of Lublin, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchak Horowitz, was called the Chose. It was said about him that he could see anything he wished. Anywhere in Poland, he could also see into the depths of a person's soul. He was one of the founders of Polish Hasidus and the disciple of the Maggid and Reb Melech. He taught that a Rebbe should be concerned not only about the religious needs of his Hasidim, but also about their livelihood and physical well-being. The Chose would personally serve food to the poor he had invited to his table. Afterwards, he would clear away the dishes. A beggar once asked the Chose, bringing the food to feed me is a mitzvah. But why do you personally take away the dishes? The Chose answered that clearing away the dishes is as holy an activity as the Kohen Gadol's work on Yom Kippur when you took the empty incense pan out of the Beis HaMikdash, Holy of Holies. Let's talk about the Kozhentse Maggid. Rabbi Yisrael Hochstein's reputation as a Torah giant and wonder worker were legendary, and many called him the second Baal Shem Tov. Rabbi Yisrael, the Kozhentse Maggid, spread Hasidus throughout Poland. At times he was so physically weak that he had to be carried to the shul. As he began to pray, however, his strength and vigor would return, and he would sing and dance as he prayed with great devotion. The revolution within Hasidus. In order to gain an understanding of the following Rebbes, it is of utmost importance to be aware of the revolution created by their approach to Hasidus. The Chose of Lublin promoted an approach that developed into a more rigorously intellectual form of Hasidus. His disciples focused their energies on relentless Torah study, the shunning of material comforts, and above all else, the endless pursuit of truth. It was a philosophy that attracted many, yet was viewed by others as too radical a departure from traditional Hasidus. The many great Hasidic leaders who emerged from this school of thought stressed the ideals mentioned above. Among them were Rabbi Yaakov Yitzchok Rabinovitz, who was called the Yid HaKodesh, the Holy Jew, and was the teacher of Rav Simcha Bunim of Pesishcha, as well as Rav Simcha Bunim's disciples. About Rav Simcha Bunim of Pesishcha, a disciple of the Chose, Rav Simcha Bunim, known as the Rebbe Reb Bunim, refocused Polish Hasidus to stress Talmud study and scholarship. Before assuming the reins of Polish Hasidus, Rav Simcha Bunim had lived in Danzig, Germany, where he was variously a lumber merchant and a pharmacist, and where he was active in reaching out to non-observant Jews in that cosmopolitan city. Among his outstanding disciples were Menachem Mendel Morgenstern of Kutsk, Rabbi Yitzchok Meir Alter de Chadushia Rim, founder of the great Hasidic dynasty of Gier, and Rabbi Yitzchok of Workham. Rav Simcha Bunim would say, every man has a treasure in his own backyard. It's foolish to search for happiness in other people's backyards. All we want, we have inside of ourselves. Did you know that Rav Simcha Bunim also loved music and was an accomplished chess player? In Danzig, he convinced the Jewish stevedores to stop working on Shabbos. First, he asked them not to record their work in writing, then to stop working on Friday night. Step by step, he made them Shabbos observers. The Kutsk, Rav Menachem Mendel Morgenstern of Kutsk, Rav Simcha Bunim's disciple, despised wealth and searched for absolute truth and honesty. He demanded perfection and self-discipline from himself and from his Hasidim. Rabbi Yitzchok Meir Rotenberg, the founder of the Gera dynasty of Hasidim, was a close colleague and disciple. His family name was later changed to Alter. It was Rabbi Yitzchok Meir who primarily succeeded the Kutzke as the leader of the Polish Hasidus. The Kutzke's son-in-law was Rabbi Avraham Bornstein of Shachashov, author of the Avner Nezer, a compendium of halachic responsum. After close to a decade of being Rebbe, the Kutzke mysteriously shut himself up in his room and for 20 years until his death rarely left his room or met with anyone. The Kutzke would say, "Where is Hashem? Wherever man lets him in, it is a great thing to bring the dead back to life, but it's even greater to bring the living back to life." Let's go to 5562-1802. We're going to talk about the greatest Talmud of the Vilna Gaon, Rav Chaim Itzkowitz, known as Rav Chaim Volozhin of Volozhin. He founded a yeshiva in Volozhin, Lithuania. The Volozhin yeshiva, a central house of advanced learning for young men, altered forever the educational system of the Jewish people. Until then, Jewish boys would attend cheder primary school and go on to study with a private tutor or in their community study hall, usually led by the local rav. The Volozhin changed all that. It was a yeshiva designed to attract outstanding students from cities and towns throughout Europe, and it was devoted to intensive Torah study. It attracted the brightest minds of Lithuanian Jewry. The yeshiva had lectures by different Rosh Yeshiva and a set schedule of study. Yeshivas of present times are all patterned more or less after the Volozhin yeshiva. As the first Rosh Yeshiva, Volozhin Rav Chaim himself molded Volozhin and through it the entire yeshiva world. In addition to his fame as being the founder of the Volozhin yeshiva, Rav Chaim Volozhin is the renowned author of the classic work Nefesh HaChayim, which was published in 1824. It is a seminal work on Jewish thought, which in many instances is based on Kabbalah. In the view of many, Nefesh HaChayim was meant to present the philosophy of the Misnagdim, the opponents of the Hasidic movement at its outset, and indirectly address some Hasidic approaches that the Misnagdim found troubling. Reb Chaim was succeeded by his son, Reb Yitzchok Volozhiner, who in addition to serving as Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin, was active in many attempts to abolish Tsarist decrees against Russian Jewry. Upon his passing, he was succeeded by his son-in-law, Reb Elezer Yitzchok Free. Upon his untimely passing, his brother-in-law, Reb Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, known as the Netziv, both an acronym of his name and a Hebrew term for prince or leader, succeeded him. And we're going to learn more about him later on, in the next year. The Netziv was joined at the helm of the yeshiva by a grandson, Reb Chaim Volozhiner, the legendary Reb Yosef Dov Ber Halevi Soloveitchik, who served as associate Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Yosef Dov, who later became the Rav of Brisk, is known as the Beis Halevi after his Torah works. Rabbi Yosef Dov's son, Reb Chaim Halevi Soloveitchik, who was married to a granddaughter of Netziv, later became a member of the yeshiva's faculty and eventually became an associate Rosh Yeshiva. He literally revolutionized Talmudic study through his methods of analysis. We will talk more about it, B'li Neder, in the next year. The yeshiva remained open for almost 90 years until the Tsarist governments demanded the authority to set the yeshiva schedule and include secular studies in the curriculum. The Netziv refused to submit to Russian anti-Semitism and closed down the yeshiva. We will continue Mir Tashem in our next shiur, talking about the Chasam Sofer. All information that we have given you on this shiur is from a book called The Jewish Experience, 2000 Years, by Rabbi Nachman Zakon.